Welcome to the Taiwanese Diaspora Podcast, where we use personal storytelling to connect people of Taiwanese heritage from all around the world. I am Cynthia, and I'm excited to use this podcast platform as a way to explore what it means to be Taiwanese X. This is episode 34. This episode is bilingual in Mandarin Chinese and English. All right, so this is a very long interview. We actually went over by quite a lot and ended up talking for 2 hours. So a few highlights. Bruce tells us about growing up on an orchard in Hood River, Oregon. And then we go deep in his post-college life. If you've been craving a story about persistence and resilience on the career front, keep listening to today's episode with Bruce. He shares about quitting a job that paid well to pursue a dream that he had since he was a kid, cradling his first pair of Nikes. It wasn't easy getting into the sneakers and branding side, but he hustled, pivoted, and met good people on the way and turned barriers into opportunities. 大家好，欢迎收听台湾人网络广播，我是阿秀，用这个平台来跟华侨华裔的台湾人聊他们的生活过程和未来的梦想。这是第34集，我们今天聊的是用国语跟英文。我跟江宗祥聊了将近两个小时，然后改成比较短一集给你们听。他小时候在果园长大，从小就知道想要走鞋子品牌的这个方向，但是这个是比较难进去的一个职业。他试了不同样的工作，遇到各种各样的人，然后做了几年就决定啊，其实想要回去他小时候梦想的东西。虽然他的薪水还不错，他下定决心要辞职。他的选择有让他父母担心了一下，但是长期来看，其实他经过的挑战真的有帮助他很多。他今天就跟我们分享他是怎么样成功得到他的梦想。
Hello.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Cynthia. 你好，你好。
Okay, where to start? Have you listened to the other episodes? Do you have a sense for how it rolls?
Yeah, I have, and it's great to hear some of people's stories and a lot of like the ones that are my parents' age and their stories, because I feel like my parents will actually be really interesting to ask some of the questions that you asked during the podcast as well, because I feel like at times I haven't even gotten to like the nitty gritty.
Well, if they want to come on this show, we would love to talk with them. So my mom is Hakka-Jazan. I saw that you have some Kaja ties as well.
Mm-hmm. Is it best to 用中文还是
Yeah, 你想用哪一个语言都可以。我想要用，如果可以中文跟英文两个用的话， I think that would be awesome.
我是可以用日式用中文，不过也是让我练习一下吧。
Yeah,
因为我觉得要是用中文也是逼着不会，比较不会用一些脏话吧。
然后如果有什么部分你到时候想要把它切掉的话，就跟我讲一声 ，and I can cut it when I'm editing.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So for today's show, I'd like to welcome Bruce. Bruce, 我们是几年前认识的。
应该是现在应该是差不多4年前吧，因为你们是2016年 的时候到台湾，你和 MIT team。
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Well, very nice to reconnect with you. 所以我们现在先开始，请你先自我介绍，然后你如果想要用国语，然后用英文两个通用，然后我们到时候聊的时候可以双语来聊。
OK， 好，那大家好，我的名字是 Bruce Chang， 江宗祥。我的家庭是我6岁的时候移民从台湾到美国，在一个很乡下的一个地方叫 Hood River, Oregon。在这里长大的，然后是在一个果园，所以我们是做农工这样子长大的，所以很高兴可以跟大家 share 一下我的，我觉得是算是也是一个蛮特别的一个 background， 还有现在的 career choice， 从回到台湾学的材料还有布料的公司， 然后回到美国做一些美国跟台湾的这样子的像 international business 的这样子的商业，然后进了一个大公司像 Nike 做他们的鞋子的材料，然后现在自己再回到开了一个公司帮忙一些台湾的厂商在这里发展，所以是很高兴可以这样子让大家 share 一下我的 some of my stories。
So very excited to have you here, Bruce. For our English audience, can you do a quick intro in English as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So hello, everyone. My name is Bruce Chang. So my family, my immediate family, my parents and my brother and I immigrated here to Hood River, Oregon from Taiwan when I was 6 years old. Pretty much grew up in a very rural area, around 6,000 people in the community. So from there, just excited to share with everybody my experience growing up in a really non-Asian community and just not seeing a lot of people that really looked like me growing up, and what my experience was like from there to University of Oregon, and really what brought me to a career choice of trying to get into brand side and working in footwear and going to Taiwan to learn about materials and the opportunity that I had connecting with a company called Singtex and learning textiles from yarn extrusion all the way out to making the fabrics and the garments that we wear. And the opportunity that I had connecting brand side and getting into footwear materials with Nike for a solid 2 years, and now coming out and working with Nike now with a brand and a business of my own that I am currently running myself.
Congratulations! 我们先开始讲你在台湾出生长大的地方好了。
OK, 好，所以我是在台湾东市区长大的，所以是离台中还有丰原往东边 east, yes. 所以是一个客家区，所以是我的家庭还有我妈妈的家庭也是全部大家是说客家长大的，不过我觉得我爸妈也是说他们很后悔没有教我们客家话。因为现在我和我哥哥是比较会听，不过讲不出来啊，是比较难讲，或者讲出来的话大家听不懂，所以也是有一点不好意思这样讲的。所以在那里长大的时候是我的家庭有在离山上那边有一块地，然后是在那里我爸爸有在那里种一些果树，苹果还有梨子。然后我爸爸他自己小时候他自己想要来美国，有美国的教育，来美国的大学这样子的，不过他自己是没有这个机会，所以他是希望我和我哥哥有这个机会还有这个 opportunity, 所以他是1990或1991的时候来到美国，是先去旧金山那边，不过那里的地不适合他，那时候是种比较多葡萄这些东西的，所以他是另外还有想要去西雅图那边，然后是坐飞机的时候经过 Oregon 还有华盛顿州的那中间，经过哥伦比亚河往下看，他们只有看到很多种果树的地方。那时候是我爸跟我爷爷一起来美国这样子来看可以买地的地方，所以那时候是就是经过从飞机经过看下去，看到这些果树还有这些地，他们决定要从西雅图开车下来看有没有适合的种果树的地方，然后就是这样子找到 Hood River, Oregon。然后从这里就是买了一块地，差不多60 acre 跟平方，我是不知道怎么样去算的，不过是蛮大的一块地，然后是在这里种，一开始是种亚洲梨。那时候就从小从在这里长大的时候就是一直 跟爸爸在果园这样子工作，做很多比较怎么样讲 laboring work。
比如说，小时候要几点起来，然后要做什么样的东西？
大部分就是会比较用大的卡车啊，或怪手这些很特别的机器。不过从小差不多10到13岁的时候就会开始试着开这些东西，然后需要挖一些洞啊，种果树，然后帮忙啊，就像pruning，我忘了中文是怎么样讲。不过就是整个水果的 harvesting 的 process in a way，结果就是全部都会在果园这样子帮忙爸爸这样，然后就是很了解。每次就是长大的时候就记得想要什么东西，爸爸妈妈都是说我们是种果树的，没有钱，对，我们是很 how should we put it blue chip workers I guess。
自古过来的。
Yeah，中文我是在想要怎么样解释的，这样子比较辛苦的工作的laboring like effect，but not like getting so much return 不过这个也是我们小孩子这样子看的这个部分啊。我那时候爸爸妈妈应该这样子有努力的这样子卖出去去 Costco 这些 distribution 也。我觉得那时候也算是蛮成功的，所以一样，我们现在还是爸爸妈妈也是在 Hood River，还是一直保留这个果园，一直每年还是在 producing Green Dragon apples 青龙苹果一样。Now is what they are working with.
That's amazing.
I feel like I've gone a little off topic.
No, I love that. Wait, so you said they sell to Costco now, so.
No. So they were distributing to Costco. At the time when I was growing up, we were selling Asian pears to Costco. And that was like the hardest work because Asian pears is what you have to keep the skin so light. That's what sells. So you have to individually bag the pears after they're pruned. So, like, all you see these trees, and they got like little bags on them just because you want to cover them and keep them away from sunlight so they could grow and look all nice and pretty when you take off the bag.
Oh, it's not to keep the squirrels away?
No. It's actually just to keep the sunlight out so they can have that white kind of looking skin.
哇哦！可是我小时候，我外公来美国的时候，他给我们住一年，然后在我们后面有种一棵水梨树。It took a couple of years to grow, but it always got eaten by birds and squirrels. So everyone's like, oh, we need to bag it. So I thought that was why it got bagged.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm sure it's a way to keep them out as well, but one of the things is absolutely to keep the sun away so they have that pure looking white and like kind of yellowish skin.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of work for every individual one.
Oh yeah. So yeah, we were paid I think the workers were getting paid like 5 cents a bag, and we were getting paid like three. That's what was going on when we were middle school and stuff.
So what was the season like? Like, did you have to get up at a specific time to do it? Or like, was it like before and after school chores?
Oh yeah, it was like a lot of spring vacation, springtime when we had to prune and like kind of plant. And then during the winter time in the harvest season, that was when it was one of the hardest, toughest jobs that I felt that I've ever done. Because you're in a packing house and all of the pears that you're touching are super cold because you can't have any heat in the building. Just because if you have heat, then these guys will over-ripen and get soft so quickly. So there's no heat in the building and you're just like crowded around, like touching all these super cold fruit and packaging them like nicely and individually in these little nets, styrofoam net, little like protectors, and then into these clam shells. And then, that's what we did for multiple winters. Just thinking about it is just like bringing some chills and memories back. But yeah, it definitely taught us about hard work and like not really receiving anything from it and But knowing that right then and there, like, this is something that I probably don't want to be doing when I grow up. So it kind of got us to maybe study a little harder, maybe. I don't know.
What did you want to do next? Tell us a little bit more about your childhood.
Yeah, I came in first grade, didn't know a lick of English, pretty much just went into first grade. I remember the story was being super quiet, trying to learn or like do the readings and follow along as I could. It was kind of funny when it came to math because in kindergarten, when I was still studying in Taiwan, we were already doing multiplications and division when I was leaving.
幼稚園的時候, wow.
Yeah. 在東市的芝麻街. Yeah, it's like Sesame Street School.
你是不是小时候要背那个九九乘法 timetable?
我只记得在那个幼稚园的时候，我爸妈已经在那教我 the multiplication table, you know, so I had to memorize that stuff. I remember doing. But yeah, going into first grade, 就一年级数学课，跟另外一些朋友坐下来在做数学的时候，大家都以为我是在比赛。不过我是一直就是觉得那么简单，因为大家都还在做加还有减。 然后我还有记得，我告诉我爸爸有一些朋友他们的数字还是写着颠倒的，然后他不相信，叫我邀请一些朋友来家里玩，然后故意叫他们写家里的电话号码，然后有真的是有写颠倒，然后他就有一点不可思议的样子。But that's a pretty funny story to tell. 三年级的时候，我哥哥就开始打篮球，因为我们小时候也是很爱运动还有篮球的。然后我哥哥打进了 AAU， 因为也是小的一个 community， 很少的球员，所以他们就是有一些可以跑可以投球的话，他们就会邀请到这些美国的 traveling team。
哦，哇！
然后美国这里就是比较特别的地方，他们就会帮小朋友。 应该3到5年级的时候就会 set up tournament 给这些不同的地区的 AAU teams， 所以我还记得小时候我哥哥就是参加了这个 AAU， 有去 Bend Oregon， 有去海边那些地方，就是离家里或许需要开车300-400 mph， 然后去那里过夜，只是去打篮球而已，然后去打3天的 basketball tournament 这样子。 对我爸妈来讲是一个很 eye-opening 的一个 experience， 因为就是冰天雪地，我们不管怎么样，大家都会去参加他们的 family 的小朋友的 AAU tournament， 然后就可以看到这些爷爷奶奶还有爸爸妈妈的家庭都会就是在 support 他们的小孩子，所以我爸妈就是觉得这个 experience 真的是蛮特别的。 轮到我的时候, when I got to AAU team, yeah, they didn't travel with me. They were over the traveling. So it was all always for me. They're just like, yeah, is your friend going? Yeah, just go with their parents. Yeah, you'll be fine.
That's awesome. Well, that's awesome that they had the trust to let you do it. Cause some families are like, no, just study. Don't do other extracurricular activities.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? That was another thing that my parents did a good thing about, which they said, hey, if you're going to play football freshman year of high school, you're going to be doing an hour of Chinese homework every day before you're done. And that was the commitment to sports because I wanted to play football that badly. That's what I did. It's just really to my, I guess, my parents that that they just like kept it up with my brother and I all these years and made sure that we never let go of the in Chinese. And whenever you go home, whenever you're at home speaking to them, it's just always Chinese, even though that they would reply to you in Hakka, like, you know, it's all Chinese.
Wow, that's actually really interesting. 你们那边没有中文学校，但是你父母在家里教你们中文跟客家话。
对，完全是在家。波特兰那边是有中文学校，然后我们是有参加，好像是2-3年，不过是一个礼拜一次。然后到那个那时候，我爸妈是觉得有一点没有效啦， 去中文学校只有一个礼拜一次，这样子几个小时，真的对他们来讲就是宁愿自己在家里教，比带到中文学校还比较有效，他们是这么认为的。我不知道 if it was right or wrong， 因为我是记得有一些那个中文学校的like speech， like where you had to speak in front of people in Chinese， like that kind of
演讲比赛那种，
对，演讲力，that really 有帮助我的 speaking ability in a way。
那他们是怎么样教你？
因为我妈妈的我的公公还有我的婆婆，他们是老师，他们是在东市是当老师的，所以我妈妈也有经过很多他们的这样子的教育。我妈妈也是在台湾也是有当一阵子是一个补习老师，然后也有接班老师，所以我妈也有做这样子的教育的 experience or teaching curriculum in a way。因为他是大部分就是半个小时写字，然后半个小时读，就是背中文，或者家里是有很多故事的小本的中文书，然后就会拿起来要背一句或者怎么样，然后需要知道了解每个字，然后是在讲什么内容里面是在讲什么东西，这些东西需要解释给爸妈这样子听。That's what we were doing in elementary school. And then that kind of changed, well, I want to say in middle school. 到国中的时候就开始比较，我觉得应该是说我和我哥那时候就变成比较会用英文沟通，我们两个。所以到那时候就比较少在家里做这些中文的功课这样子的东西。不过最后爸妈还是有说，要是要玩电动还是要用电脑的话，还是需要写一篇中文的功课或者作文，然后是有带很多台湾买的补习的功课，
哇，
然后会带回来美国这边给我们这样子写。
哇，好特别哦。
Yeah.
So lucky. That's a lot of work. Your mom's really dedicated. That's like really amazing.
Yes.We're absolutely still thanking them every day for being as dedicated as they were, because, you know, I definitely wouldn't be in the position that I am today without the Chinese. Absolutely. So pretty much growing up 在一个很乡下的地方长大，真的是很大部分的朋友就是从白人还有墨西哥人的背景。大部分就是在 Hood River Community 的话就是这样子占，我是觉得 97% 吧，真的是很少的东方的 family 一起在这里长大的。我记得我爸妈只有好像两三个家庭吧，他们有时候会去拜访一下，他们是算是一个小的一个 Asian community 在 Hood River 那边。这样子就是说长大的这个 experience 是蛮特别的，因为我觉得我的想法跟很多来这里，不过去洛杉矶或者去比较大的都市的小孩子的长大的 experience 是比较不一样的，因为我觉得真的是有一点 I don't know, like I want to say it was just a more of a gosh,How should I put it? It was just more of a white trash experience. I don't want to really like say that, but like that's what we did as kids. Like we were just trying to go out into the forest as much as we can and into Mount Hood. And we were just going into the orchard and cutting up and just with like machetes and making our own trails and fishing in the streams and catching crayfish and.Doing all these.
That sounds amazing.
You know, and then just like getting into trouble as far as just like, drugs and alcohol in high school, you know, that, but you don't hear about Asian kids doing these things, but sometimes that's what we get into when these are your friends, and that's what that's how the small of the community was. But We're all right. We're still good. Yeah, I wanted to just say that my experience growing up was definitely different, especially coming from the countryside of the US. Yeah, it was definitely working class though. But yeah, just a bunch of rowdy kids just want to spend their weekends just so bored out in the countryside that we're just trying to find things to do, blowing stuff up.
Did you ever get into hiking? Because that area of the country is just beautiful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, but haven't gotten to backpacking. We've definitely gotten a couple times of hiking, camping, where you're just hiking into the Mountain National Forest and then camping there for a night, bringing everything back out. Growing up, it's funny because the experience was it's so countryside that you just want to get out of it and go into the city and just be where it's like busy and just like where it was active. And nowadays, I'm always going back to Hood River thinking like, man, when am I going to try and get a house back out here, you know, and just try and find a way to live back out there because it's just so nice in Hood River. We just didn't know what we had until we left because it is a beautiful area. 中文说就是有山有海这样子的一个背景，很漂亮的一个背景。
Yeah, I did a race hood to coast a couple years ago. You know, the relay race. I guess we started at Mount Hood.
Government camp area, yeah.
I would like to go back and actually do a proper trip next time.
How many miles did you do?
Typically, it's like 10 people, 200 miles
Couple
total.
legs,
Yeah, I
yeah.
don't remember my legs of it. Probably 10 to 15, maybe. You left Hood River to go to college.
Yeah, so leaving Hood River to go to college, that was kind of a funny experience in itself. Was just as far as just like high school in the US, where like I was accepted my senior year in October to University of Oregon. And I was just like, well, that was my choice of where I wanted to go. And now I'm accepted.
So party the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just like I had offsite after lunch. I didn't even need to come back to school after lunch. Talking to Taiwanese kids growing up and their experience and their schooling experience, it's like, man, like that's just crazy to think about where I'm just like free to do whatever I want at noon and I'm able to drive at 16 and I'm just like, yeah, we're just getting into trouble. I shouldn't always say getting into trouble. I was a good kid. I'm gonna keep on saying that for the parents. We're still good kids. We're still good band. You know, we still got A's and B's. We had to keep that up in order to participate in school and stuff like that. For me, growing up, I was already addicted to shoes, and I was a sneakerhead from middle school. Like, my parents had a friend that was working for Nike as an IT. And we had a chance to go into the employee store in middle school. And I remember that was like the first time my dad was just like, all right, you get a pair of just walking shoes and then you get a pair of basketball shoes. And then I was just like blown away. I remember getting my shoes and actually like cradling it and then just like, yeah, like putting in like on a pedestal pretty much, like wishing for a great season every year. That was my ad starting the addiction towards sneakers and understanding about sneakers and wanting to get into, yeah, the brand side to understand like how designers like design shoes. And that was when I was myself drawing shoes. Yeah, and trying to create my own little portfolio. Yeah, and that led me to University of Oregon, where I graduated with sports marketing and a minor in Chinese, which was kind of funny as well. Those courses were a lot of people were just like, man, you shouldn't be in there. I was like, I felt kind of bad.
You're one of those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I felt kind of bad because they're just like, man, what are you doing here? You're like speaking good Chinese. Like we're still trying. But at the same time, it was some of the people that I met were just super impressive about how good their Chinese were, and how committed they were for the 4 years that they were at the university and doing what they can to learn everything about the language. And some of them were just super impressive.
But you plotted it out because you knew you wanted to go into shoes, like a career in sports and shoes.
Yes. So talking a little bit more about that, a lot of it was definitely career and learning experience. I graduated in 2009. That's when the big recession happened. So nobody was really able to find work and jobs.
Right.
I was doing fine dining throughout high school. I was able to get a job as a server at Columbia Gorge Hotel. Yeah, right in Hood River. So I was able to do that for 2 years and do that throughout college as well for some summers and have that experience on my resume that I was able to get a job up in Seattle after connecting with my brother. My brother went to University of Washington after graduating high school, so he was already up in Seattle. So I went up there to look for opportunities and was able to get a position with a hotel up there. The hotel experience, like all of this life experience really was, it's really funny because like throughout, I want to say I did not have really any Asian friends. It was hard for me to really relate to Asian, I want to say, yeah, the students. I remember like they had their clique and yeah, and I would just seem like I was lost, I guess. 'Cause I remember a lot of them, like in their clique, would just be like looking at me, like curious in a way,
Because
because
of your hobbies?
no,
Because you know the language and you look Asian.
yeah, I know the language, but they don't know that I can speak it really, because they just think that I was born here because I had no Asian friends. And majority of this or these people are kind of like international students that came here and like have their own cliques already at the university. And, you know, with me and my friends, it was just the network of friends.
But how do you think that shaped your identity?
I have always thought about that because like I was definitely trying to like figure that out for a long period of time. At the end of the day, I felt like the people, my friends, you know, everybody that I met throughout my life and throughout college are just good, genuine people. I feel like I would be a lot different. My personality would be 100% a lot different if I grew up in Taiwan. Yeah, absolutely. Just because of hearing about how my cousins grew up and like what they had to go through in school and all that stuff. It was just so much more free, like, I don't know, freedom in like the what we were doing, what we were picking up as hobbies, and yeah, what we were doing every day. Like, once again, back to the whole AAU story with my brother, like being in the stands at my brother's basketball game, my mom would be talking to parents asking about their homework and their grades, and then the parents would like give her a really, really confused look, like, we have no idea, we're just here to just making sure that they're having a good time. My mom really quickly knew that that wasn't a question to really ask other parents. So pretty much getting the job up in Seattle and getting to work in the service industry is always just such a funny industry. I mean, like the movie waiters really like to, not too much like the pranks that they're doing, but I don't know. I feel like some of the personalities, it is definitely like what how they depict it in some of the movies, because in the service industries there's so much different backgrounds and everybody's personality is just, yeah, clashing. It's smorgasbord, which I personally really enjoyed and thought that working experience was unique and awesome. I met a lot of servers and bartenders and people that have been kind of lifers in the industry, that they've been doing what they were doing for 30, 35 years just because the money is so good. You're able to get like $500, $600 a night from tips that you just kind of don't want to let go of it. After 5 years in, and when the economy got pretty much better, I knew that this wasn't something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life, which was doing weddings and doing banquets. I was good at it. I was good at hospitality. I was good at customer service. But once again, I knew that I wanted to do something in sports and I wanted to do something in footwear. I bet my mom still remembers that phone call that I had with her and the discussion of me saying that I'm going to let go of this cushy job and I'm going to start a part-time position at Nike Town, Seattle. And yeah, that was a very, very interesting and tough conversation. My mom said that she didn't sleep for a month straight after I did that move.
She told you this afterwards, after you got situated?
Yeah, she told me this afterwards. Yeah.
I feel like parents do that.
Yeah, because yeah, absolutely. They're definitely worried because I had such a cushy and such a secure position. And they're just like, why are you giving that up? Like, there's no way that, you know, you're somebody in Taiwan that you would give that up. And I was just like, you know, I just knew I wanted to do more than this.
I mean, I guess you knew since middle school you wanted to work in sports.
Yep.
But how did you know that was the time to leave? And did you have some sort of transition plan, or you're like, nope, I'm just going to go all in?
No, I did not have a transition plan. I myself just knew I couldn't handle the same thing over and over again. I would not be able to handle that. Even though like every wedding is different, it's still the same stuff, different day, you know, kind of a deal.
Did you think about it for a while?
Yeah, and then I knew that no matter what, I can always land back in customer service somewhere. And I knew that I could always have that as a backup. So I wasn't too scared. And I told my mom this, but she was just, yeah, she was freaking out. I took the position in Nike Town, Seattle when they had a seasonal, just like a quick seasonal position. But because of how much I knew about Nike, like the guy tried to stump me during the interview by asking what was the first shoe with a Nike airbag within it.
Oh my gosh, that's a very specific question.
Cynthia, do you know?
I do not.
So it was a Nike Tailwind. And it was 1972 and 1982. I was able to give him that answer and he was just like, all right, you know your Nike history. But I just knew too much about the brand because of Oregon and all of just being a fan of it, I guess. You know, it definitely got me the position and I was in because of my background in hospitality and customer service. It was really easy for me to help the customer. And during the time they were doing like having the customers fill out surveys for like $5 gift certificate. And if you get the most surveys, you get like employee of the week or just like these like small little giveaways, I believe. I think I still hold the record as far as like 42 surveys. Yeah, I still remember that because everybody was just like, how do you do it? And it's just like these like things. Like, you just tell them it's $5, you know, like, and then just be friendly. People will be willing to do it, but I don't know. Social interactions these days sometimes get a little weird. From there, I actually was constantly making informational interview set up with Nike employees here at WHQ to try to find out exactly what I wanted to do. Because everybody at Nike or work for Nike is just like, hey, man, Nike is huge. You need to pinpoint like what you're good at and try to figure out what specifically you would like to do for the company. So I was doing multiple interviews with, let's see now, like marketing, like this photography department. I was also doing with the catering and the PR department, stuff like that. And I landed with a footwear developer by the name of Sarah Sowers. She was in Nike ID during the time. She was a 5-year footwear developer already in and was a friend of a friend that was kind enough to sit down with me for a little bit. And from the informational interview, she gave me pretty much 3 career paths. She told me if I really wanted to do what she thinks I want to do, which is her job as like building a shoe. She gave me either A, go back to school to study product development and get a degree in it, or B, what I'm doing right now, working from the ground up and just start from the Nike Town side and try to find a way into headquarters. And then from headquarters, as long as you could get a black badge, which is a full-time employee within Nike, you can start connecting and having these stretch positions that they called it, where you could move into a position where it's what you want to do for the company. And then, or C, which is the last option, she said, I can try to find a job overseas to learn from the ground up as far as how these things are made. If I were able to get factory experience, she said that would be the most beneficial and probably the quickest. For me, I actually chose B and was trying to find a way to wiggle in to Nike HQ. So I made that transition and down to Nike Town Portland.
Sorry to interrupt. Can we back up? Can you talk a little bit about the informational interview portion? Like, what did you ask them or how did you reach out to them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I feel like in the U.S., so much is about informationals and networking, like who you network with. It's really what gets you into that job opportunity, that position. So I wish I knew about doing informationals more in college, because that was definitely the time to do it. And you actually have a reason and a thing to explain why you're doing it, instead of, you know, I'm just trying to take your job. The informational, my questions was, it's all about their job, their position. What is their day-to-day like? What do they find difficult about their job? Or what do they like about their job? And of course, more about the brand side of things. As a huge corporation, like, how did you fit in and how get into the position that you are there today? Everybody that I met was willing to take an informational, is way they are happy to talk about their job, always, from my understanding. I mean, like, everybody that I talked to really was very open about their position and how they got there, and because they understood the hustle and what I was doing was similar to what they were doing in order to get to their position. So they were very willing to share and give me a lot of pointers about their job and whether or not I would be a good fit.
And did you bring your portfolio to any of these things, or were you still working on your portfolio at that time?
I was still working on my portfolio at that time. I only had my resume and, like, pretty much just telling them about, like, my drive and my background and what I was doing to try to get into Nike. And from there, a lot of them were just appreciated what I was trying to do. So they were just trying to get me connected to people, but they weren't really the ones that offered up any positions, really.
Awesome. Thank you. So you took part B.
So pretty much during the transition to part B, when I was going from Seattle to Portland, I decided to make that transition from Nike Town Seattle to Nike Town Portland to be closer to WHQ. So yeah, I could continue to do network and connect with people on campus for more opportunities. Right when that transition happened, I was set to transition in June. My parents decided that we were going to set up a trip back to Taiwan in mid-June, because my cousin was getting married. So all of these things were set up to where I was going to leave Nike Town Seattle, spend a month to transition down to Nike Town Portland, and really wouldn't start work until the beginning of August. And when that all was set into place, one day I was working at Nike Town Seattle, I think 2 weeks before I was leaving, just normal shift, but seeing three men dressed up in suit and tie coming into the store, and was really, really interested in a lot of the shoes and the clothing in the area. But I was just speaking English to them in the beginning, just to introduce some of the stuff and to direct them where they needed to go. And I remember Jason pointed to me and said in Chinese to his employee on the side, and said, we need a guy like this in Chinese. And I said, I speak Chinese. I understood what you said. What do you mean by, like, what do you need? So that got, like, the business card exchange, and them letting me know that they were supplying to Nike, and that if I was interested in to seeing if I was willing to do a position of sales with them. Well, they were just, like, saying, like, would you be interested in a position to just, like, come to Taiwan and learn? Really, it was just a quick conversation. I really knew nothing about Syntex at all, or how that process of materials to factories, to garments, to retail shops. Like, I still didn't understand the whole steps. It took a lot of Googling, understanding, hey, Syntex is actually legit. They supply to a lot of outdoor brands, and a lot of YouTube videos about them, and a lot of awards in Taiwan. It was just perfect timing because we were going back to Taiwan for my cousin's wedding. I remember the day because my whole family was just like, all right, as soon as we land in Taoyuan International Airport, we're just going to go straight up to Syntex and go see them as a family.
Wow.
But yeah, my mom and dad went too, and all that stuff. But yeah, they connected right away because Jason's wife is also from Dongzi, and she was Hakka as well. So they connected that way, and they just said, hey, this is meant to be. And they offered me a job right then and there.
Wow, 真的好幸运哦。
Yeah, it was very, very lucky and very fortunate. 我就是这样子发生，他们就跟我问说要不要花一年在台湾，在五股台北工业区六个月，在他们的办公室做 sales， 然后六个月在他们的染厂还有工厂学抽纱，还有到染布这个部分。然后我还记得就是当天去了Syntex 之后，回家的路上我们在车上在谈这个 position， 我就是告诉我妈妈，这个就是从离开 Edgewater 在西雅图到现在的一个结果啦，不过还是一个新的一个开始，一个 new beginning。 But I told them that hey, you know, it was an intern position, it was kind of just like a learning experience in a way, so I really wasn't getting paid anything. But what I said was to my parents was that, you know, this was going to be an experience that would probably set me up for the next part of my life. So as long as I spend the time and learn it, this will be good in the long run. And I told them, 我不会让你们失望的啦. That's what I said to them. And yeah, that was the beginning of spending that summer in Syntex, where I went back to Portland and just told my manager, hey, this is what happened. I know you just picked me up, but I got to leave in the next month.
That's amazing. So wait, you actually went from option B to going to C.
Yeah, and crept into C. Yep.
I bet your parents are so proud.
Yeah, they're absolutely really proud of where I'm at right now. But the whole story of going into Nike and like how I was let go, that's definitely a story in itself too. So Syntex for a year, I came back. So I went back to Taiwan, and that's where we met during my year in Syntex. And that was essentially like right in the beginning of my work experience.
Yeah, in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I admire your hustle, and to some degree you like put in a lot of work, and then there's like a stroke of luck, and then obviously more work.
Yeah. I want to say, of course, it's good people. It's definitely luck included, and a lot of it is, I want to say majority of it is, of course, putting yourself in that position. If you are putting yourself in that position, then you have a chance of getting that luck, you know, to get to that next spot. Cause I felt like where I set myself up with Nike Town Seattle, I got myself in that position to do that transition over. And Syntex also put me in that position to get connected more with brands. And I knew that as long as I learn about the language of how materials and textiles are sold, and as long as I learn about how the supply chain works, that will get me into the next step. The whole time at Syntex was kind of weird too, because they already had a US rep. So they already had a US rep by the name of Mike. And Mike's just like this older gentleman in his 60s that's been helping Syntex for the past 8 years. He had his ways. He was very set on his ways, and he did not like me at all coming.
because you were a threat, even though you were like, I'm just here to learn, just here for a year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when he first came back to Taiwan, I said, hey, Mike, is it all right if we do a one-on-one? I really want to learn from you, because what Jingtex has planned for me to set up is to go back to the U.S. to help you, because that was what they are grooming me for, in a way. And his first reply to me was, if you really want to help me and Jingtex, you shouldn't come back to the U.S.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I still remember distinctively, because he had the sweet spot, you know? Why did he want somebody coming in and ruin it? It is a very lucrative business. There's a lot of trust involved, especially coming into these representations and like not knowing exactly what the person is doing across the ocean. And you're getting paid good money for sometimes not doing so much, and like, you know, you're able to milk it and take advantage of it, and you don't want anybody kind of stepping in, you know? It's tough to say. Would I be like that if I was in this position? I don't know. It's tough to say, because if I worked at it at so many years and all, I am told that I need to teach somebody that I don't want to teach, you know, that can be tough too. I don't know if it was bad on Mike's side or is bad on Jingtex's side, but they definitely didn't communicate about, you know, how they wanted to approach this. So they kind of just shoved me in there. And that's what kind of happened throughout my first year back here in the U.S. So after my 1 year was up in Taiwan, they actually wanted to keep me in Taiwan for longer. But that didn't make any sense to me, because I said, like, I think I can sell. It would make more sense if I follow Mike and learn how to sell from the U.S. and help you guys over there. So then we set up a contract and how it will work as far as me coming back over here and then helping Mike. And I did that for a solid year before Mike got kind of sick of it and was quitting, because he was trying to find faults in what I was doing. But every time that he would try to do that, like, Jingtex will always be on my side on things. It was just a really interesting working experience. But at the end of the day, Mike left.
How was the Taiwan experience?
It was great for me, but I understood why some international, like, exchange students or like working people going over there for work might find it kind of difficult, just because work is pretty much your life over there. It's tough to say that, but it really is. When you are going in at 8 o'clock in the morning and not leaving until 11 o'clock at night, work is your life, you know? When it got into production, these people, like the North Face team, was doing a solid 2 weeks of that and only one day off, which was Sunday. They were even working Saturdays doing that. So work becomes your life. The people that are at work becomes your family. And it's extremely difficult to leave family, where you are fortunate to find a job when you graduate in Taiwan. You don't know what else, if there's bigger and better out there, because you don't want to give this up. But you really don't know, because you really haven't worked any other job. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does.
Because that's what I was getting kind of feel as far as talking to coworkers over there. They didn't have my kind of mentality of just like, you know what, I'm just going to quit and I'm just going to make things happen, you know? Yeah, that's a very Western way of thinking about it. See what opportunity lies, like, as long as you have like somewhat of a goal, right? But yeah, Taiwan, there's so much influence, because majority of the people that the college graduates, they're still living with family. So you have the influence at home of, hey, you got a good job, stick with that job.
Don't rock the boat.
Exactly. And then once you get into work, you're working all day and you're with these people that are constantly complaining about their job, but they are always saying they're fortunate enough and like enjoy what they're doing, but they just don't know what other jobs or what else is out there. So, but that comes along with another cultural things with it too, because a lot of these factory working families that I've met and talked to, they really, in their lifetime, they don't go like 100 miles outside of where they were born, you know? Because I met a lady, so it was one of those woven beam machines, right? And it's just this huge beam machine. In the beam machines, there's these individual reeds that you need to hook an individual thread through. So it is an organized column. So like these reeds, there's like thousands of them in this one beam. And then you just watch this lady using this claw-like mechanism where it's just this like rake-looking tool. And she's just like scooping it one by one, or in segments of like 5 strings and hooking them through the reed. But she was doing this so quick that I was just like, damn, there's nobody but you can do that. She was going so quick. It was just like, it was amazing. But then it was just like, man, this is what you've been doing 9 to 5 for 20 years, you know? And it's just like, it's definitely something about that. And then there's something about, yeah, that's just the way of life. They don't want to rock the boat, and they enjoy and they're thankful for what they have, you know? It was definitely very fortunate and eye-opening for me to have that experience while I was in Taiwan, you know, and being out in the factories and seeing these things. Sorry, went off a little bit again.
No, thank you for that. Because I think just from the job perspective of like, hey, you have a safe job, why would you want to change it? I think that's probably something that resonates a lot with probably people in our generation, or, yeah, you know, brought up in the middle of the two cultures.
Yeah. I tell a lot of my friends and everybody that's thinking about it these days, like, hey, absolutely, like, it doesn't matter how old you are, do an informational with somebody that you feel like they're doing the job that you want to do. They would still be happy about talking about their job. You're just asking them, like, what their day-to-day is like. And you can definitely, from there, figure out if that would be a right fit for what you want to do. And try to pursue it. The parental influence and just the family influence, if you're living with all of your family, aunts and uncles and stuff, that would be super tough. And I would understand why you wouldn't be able to, or not a lot of people rock the boat.
Yeah, sorry, like totally detracted. You're trying to finish your Singtex to Nike to your own company transition.
Okay, so pretty much after my conversation with Singtex was, they knew that I was still all about sneakers. Like I would really talk to them about shoes and stuff like that. And clothing, I was getting better at textiles and talking about that aspect of it. But I was still constantly trying to figure out how I was going to be getting into shoes. So throughout the time that I came back to the U.S. and was with Singtex, I kept in touch with Sarah Sowers. I've been giving her really apples from my family every year during Christmas. And yeah, just been keeping in touch because, hey, people that you network with that you want to feel like you want their job later on, you know, just try to be extra friendly with them. But at the same time, just let them know what you yourself have been doing to accelerate or putting yourself into that position to succeed. So I've been keeping in touch with her and letting her know my movements and going overseas and stuff like that. That winter of 2017, she said, there's an open position in materials. It's not guaranteed because it was a contract position, but if you're interested, this is a way into the brand. I applied for it. I met some great people during my interview and was able to get hired pretty quickly just because they saw what I did for the past 3 years and the transitions that I was doing. All of them have said, hey, this is a contract position. This is going to end, but this gets you everybody that's going into as a full-time Nike employee pretty much has to take this step anyway. So try your best to find a way to land a full-time position. So after I got the job, I told Singtex, hey, I'm sorry. I need to end the contract at the end of this year because I got an opportunity with Nike. They were really understanding because at the same time, they are proud to say that they themselves have somebody working at Nike. I'm sure that they share that story all the time. After getting into Nike, it was a really of an understanding of how a corporate structure works in a whole matrix system, a matrix corporation works, because every department that you're working for is essentially its own small company within the whole conglomerate. What you are doing individually, somebody that's doing your same position across just like several buildings away probably don't know like what you're working on. That's just how big the company was, and that was definitely something to adjust to. I was fortunate enough to get into footwear materials development, and yeah, it was just with good people. It was a good team and good people, but a lot of the times it was still an understanding of, how should I put it? 我在 Nike 的 full time 的 employee 会跟我说，不能放全部的 energy 在你的工作上，你应该要把差不多二分之一的能力去找工作。不过这个对我来讲是有一点比较难的地方，因为我们也是有一点 ，because I grew up, you know, working hard and trying to let my work show for itself.And usually things happen that way, but it's definitely not that way in a corporate environment. Like, you have to be looking out for yourself no matter what. So yeah, I just put my head down and I just did my work for the year and a half that I was there at Nike. Did a lot of great stuff for the brand that I felt. I worked in three different departments. I was in cleated, that consists of American football, baseball, lacrosse, and softball across the NFL, collegiate, and all that stuff. I was involved with Nike Golf, did a lot of Tiger Woods shoes. I did a lot of Rory shoes. And then did a lot of Nike SB.
Very, very high profile work.
Yes, very high profile work because it was all performance categories, which I was very fortunate to be in. But you yourself are on an island in this whole matrix corporation, because there was only me in this footwear materials position within the category. So all of the questions regarding materials will be coming to either the designer or the developer. So as long as you know how to get the people what they want as far as what their design aesthetics or their design language is, and if you're able to get a physical sample of what the designer wants, then man, like, you're good. You're set at Nike. And it's essentially what I was doing. Like, every project that designers or the teams had in mind, I was always able to at least get a sample back and be able to communicate really well what we can and cannot do with this material and what the reasons were. And I would be able to lay out options for them. And a lot of the reasoning behind it is just because I've been on the vendor side of it. And majority of them are in China or in Taiwan that I was dealing with that could speak Chinese. So I can also communicate with them on another level. And they were super happy about that too. So it made it really easy for me while I was at Nike to really deliver my projects and my material to the teams. What I wasn't doing was trying to find a full-time position for myself. What I did for the year and a half was really just put my head down and kicked ass. And until pretty much this summer in June, where my director pulled me aside and said, hey, your contract is coming up. Your position is really needed. So I don't think there's an issue as far as it getting extended till the end of the year. And this was going to be the end of 2019. And she said that, but I would strongly advise you to just look for jobs or full-time positions and start interviewing. And I'll put in a good word for you. And I said, yeah, okay, no problem. I will spend till the end of the year looking for positions. a month before my contract end, which was the beginning of July, she calls me up again saying, hey, there is an issue with your contract because you already been extended twice and you're over 2,000 hours. There may be an issue extending your contract. Let your directors or people that you worked with to send an email to the higher ups so they can show that your position is necessary. So I got VPs, directors, and everybody. They were more than happy to sending out email on my behalf saying, yes, we like Bruce on the team. We want to keep him. We know that he's over, but his position is really crucial to the department and the team. A week before my contract ended, I got a, hey, thanks for sending out all those emails. You're approved. You're good until the end of the year. Try to find a full-time position before the end of the year. And I said, yeah, okay, no problem. I'll spend more time trying to find a full-time position now instead of just spending all the time doing my work. Wednesday, 2 days before my contract ended, call from director. Your contract is being held up because Nike themselves, as a company as a whole, is discussing contract positions, which is ETWs. Contract positions and the ability to extend over 2,000 hours. It's on hold. To tell you the truth, I don't think it's going to be extended. You should be expecting to be let go Friday.
Oh my gosh. They gave you 2 days notice?
She gave me a 2 days notice. She told me that Nike itself, the higher ups, didn't want to tell me until Friday.
Wow.
And just tell me the day of and then just have me just like leave.
Walked out.
Yep. It was over the summer. A lot of my teammates, a lot of people in the category were out on summer break or taking time off. And so I was there on a Friday and I was gone on Monday when they came back from weekend. People were just, they were super upset and mad on my behalf. And it was just like, how can you like, yeah, they even like, they even had like a little hashtag following called Justice for Bruce going on for a little while. It was super funny. It was on my desk and stuff. I just send you a picture of it. Gosh, looking back, it was a blessing in disguise. Definitely in hindsight, 2020. What happened was I was let go in July. In August, I went on unemployment and trying to figure out what the hell I was doing or going to do. Whether or not if I had an opportunity to get back to Nike, because everybody was just like, job openings will happen soon in September after the first quarter's done. Just wait, you'll be able to get your position back. And I was just like, all right, maybe I should just spend a month, enjoy unemployment, and just work on the house where my wife and I just bought a new house here in Beaverton. So we were putting in hardwood floors and stuff like that. That was another thing that talking to a lot of Taiwanese people about it that they found really interesting. I don't know if they were a little jealous. It's more about just like working on the house yourself, like doing little DIY projects. Like we tore out the carpet in the house, put in hardwood floors ourselves. And a lot of these vendors or Taiwan friends that came and like looked at it and was just like, huh, wow, that's never thought about like doing something like that. I always wanted like stuff like that. Whether or not if I was going to get back into Nike, and that was when Northwest Material Show went on at the Portland Convention Center. I had an opportunity from my director to interview with Under Armour to work possibly in their basketball category with Curry, where I was super excited about.
Wow.
So I did the interview with them that day at the convention. It was the interview came and went, but in the same day at the convention was where I met back up with a lot of Taiwan vendor friends. One friend was saying, hey, now that you've been let go by Nike, would you be interested in going back as far as representing? He told me that it wouldn't just be his company, it would be three companies total that need somebody to help with their Nike account and just their Nike account.
That's amazing.
And they thought I would be perfect for it because I knew everybody within Nike and, well, as far as the material teams within Nike. As after not hearing back about the Curry position for the month of August, in September, I kept in touch with these companies and started jotting up a contract with them and how it would look and what I would do for them. And when I really didn't hear back from Under Armour until the start of October, I was just like, man, waiting 2 months for a contract position is just, that's just not the way to go. Oh, yeah. During this time, I also interviewed with Nike, and that's another messed up thing again. They ended up making the cleated and the whole, that whole department having a manager position, materials developer manager position. And for skateboarding, they had a material developer two positioning. And then for golf and tennis, they also had a material developer two positioning. And I asked whether or not if I can apply for the material developer two position, because it requires 5 years of footwear developing experience. And I was told, no, I do not qualify.
Even though you've already done a lot of work for them and launched so many products.
To say it pretty nastily was really, I was doing three people's job by myself.
Because you had all those categories under you initially.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And they wouldn't give that job back to me.
Bruce, I admire your guts and just being like, that's it. I'm going to do my own.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I mean. Like, at the same time, I was able to earn the trust of these vendors to be like, these are the things I would do for you for sure if you want me to represent you. I was really clear about it, what I can and cannot do for them. And as long as I was upfront, I felt like we had a mutual understanding and they were really happy to find somebody that they were able to trust. Because, yeah, this representation stuff, it's just a lot about trust and communication. When I went back to the interview, I was only able to interview for a material developer one position, which was for Nike Kids, Young Athletes, and Nike Basketball and Global Football. I did the interview, but at the end, I decided to take my name out of the hat and said that I had a better opportunity. And now I am working with Nike, which works out pretty well, because a lot of people know my name within the company now. Whenever I'm on campus, there's always people that are just like, hey, we'd love to set up a meeting and we can talk more about it. But since COVID, that kind of has changed a little bit as far as meeting wise. Within this time, there's a lot more people as far as Taiwan vendors within Nike needing some more people in my position just because they aren't physically able to come here anymore due to the pandemic. So yeah, running this business, I want to say I really got myself into a niche position, but thinking about it, not a lot of people can do my work and do it well. So there's definitely something going for that. And I told my mom the success that came from when I first left, it is taking that little leap of faith, but just at least having a little bit of that, you know, North Star that you're kind of chasing.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Yeah, sorry, it just went directly into English, but I felt like if I were to use Chinese, it would have taken way, way too long.
I would say congratulations. It's so wonderful hearing, first of all, your background, because I think it's really cool that you got to grow up on an orchard. And then
Yeah. Two,
knowing what you want to do and then doing it, even though you might have like societal voices, or I guess like what I feel is like, oh no, I can't take that leap because XYZ or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Very much admire you for that. I guess we'll try to wrap up a little bit because I ate up a lot of your time today.
No, I feel like I took a lot of your time, a lot to give in the life story.
Well, let's see. So, I mean, we can definitely talk again next time if you have anything else you want to talk about, because I would love to hear more about the company and the business side, being an entrepreneur and all that. But I think in the meantime,
yep.
Do you have other advice for anybody just in general that you want to share? And what's the best way, if you would like to promote your business, for people to get in touch with you?
I want to say for the latter question, I don't know. My business is pretty quiet in itself because I only deal with Nike and Nike accounts. If you want to get in touch with me, you yourself are interested in making your own shoes. And I can talk to you as far as how the process of doing that and maybe get you connected with the material components to do that. But footwear is definitely very, very complex when you're talking about multiple components and multiple assembly aspects of it. But if somebody's interested in starting their own footwear brand, I can try to assist somewhat in that.
How can they get in touch with you?
Oh, they could just send an email to me at bruce.chang@cleversourcepdx.com. I'm more than happy to talk to anybody that's interested in what this industry is kind of like and this whole international business really as well.
Awesome.
More than happy to share and talk to anybody that's really interested.
Thanks, Bruce. This was amazing.
Yeah, thanks for hearing the story once again. I know that it ran a little long.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about next time?
There could be more stories and stuff like that to share as far as being Asian American and working at Nike and like the experience of that and what's going on, yeah, with the company itself, with the whole social justice part. All very interesting, but yeah, that's probably something for another time.
Yeah, I would love to actually ask you about that next time because we hear a lot about the protests going on right now in Portland. And there's also these documentaries and news articles about a variety of companies using like labor forces. I don't know if you can talk about that next time, but I would personally be very interested in that as well.
Yeah, for sure. Because one of the color designers that I met at Nike, he's an African American, and he is all out trying to make some change within the company and what he feels is a needed change for what Nike has essentially taken for granted for the past, well, ever since that they came into business. But at the same time, it's really not just Nike. It's a lot of other companies out there, but Nike just having so much history and having so many diverse culture on campus now, people want their voices heard, and absolutely they demand this change.
Yeah, there's also, I listened to this podcast, The Daily, a couple weeks ago. There was one about a girl who worked at Adidas.
Oh yeah, yep, heard about that story too. And yeah, I mean, like, they're definitely protesting on campus over at Adidas as well. And just driving by the campus, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, there's people at the front entrance and making sure that their voices are heard. And
there's a lot of work for us to do, for sure, as a country.
Oh yeah, it's crazy out there right now. Hey, we do what we can, and just very fortunate for what we have.
Thank you so much. Congratulations again on all the hustle.
Thanks. Sometimes I guess I don't give myself enough credit, but I always put it to where I had good people around me and I had good people pushing me in the right direction, and they believed in me. Yeah, but a lot of the times I want to say it's majority putting yourself in that position. As long as you are there, you will always at least get yourself in that situation where you could probably succeed. So thanks so much for chatting with me, Cynthia.
Thanks, Bruce. 谢谢, 下一次再聊。
好好好, 再见, bye-bye.
And that's it for today. Please send me a message on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at TWDIASPORA, or shoot me an email. It's hello@TaiwaneseDiaspora.com. And if you or other people you know have stories that they'd like to share on this podcast, please send them my way as well. Some of you have asked about how to support the show. So if you are inclined, go to ko-fi.com/TWDIASPORA to donate. And if you like to read, check out my book recommendations at bookshop.org/shop/TWDIASPORA. And 10% of the proceeds will come back to support the show. All right, see you next time.